Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 122 of Geektown Radio. I'm here this week with Ross.
Hi Dave, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. All the better for hearing my little theme there.
Yeah, well, it's a good way of introducing you. So what have you been up to?
I haven't been up to that much this month. It's been a weird one. I tell you what I did do. Do you remember last time we were on that you said that the season, you said that you gave the date for the season two of Baskets? And I said to you, well, that's funny because season one hasn't finished yet. So I thought that was weird that was happening.
Yeah.
But you were dead on that as soon as season one finished, season two was the next week. I only found out last week, so I had about three to catch up with. But yeah, I've been on season two of that. It's still really good. It's taken in a different, like, if this was a Netflix series, like I'll talk about Glow in a minute, which I also watched, but that sort of, you can end to end, that stands alone. And the first season of Baskets, while there were questions, it sort of, they could have left it and it would have been fine, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
But the fact that they've carried it on and it is in some new interesting places. Yeah, but I'm still really enjoying it.
I think it's good with shows when they manage to round off the first season in a reasonable way.
Yeah.
Just in case, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Sneaky Pete was the same. Sneaky Pete could have been, well, apart from that, I think it gave a little nod to a second series.
Yeah.
If that, it was just in one big scene. But if that wasn't there, I think Sneaky Pete would have stood fine on its own.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But obviously, better to get more, I suppose.
Yes, definitely with that show.
So yeah, like I mentioned, the other thing I've been watching is Glow on Netflix, which is really good. I am into neither drama nor wrestling, but it completely hooked me and it's really, really good.
I haven't got to Glow yet. I've been spending my time trying to catch up on series that I kind of dropped and have gone back
well,
to.
That'll take you months, won't it, Dave, with your list?
Yeah, well, it has been a bit like that, but I'll watch, because I'll start off watching a few episodes of things and then big shows will come back. So,
of course,
so I start watching those and then I end up sort of using this period when there's basically nothing new coming on
to
catch up. So I've gone back and started watching stuff.
I would definitely recommend Glow on Netflix. If you're into Marc Maron or you've heard his podcast even once, and you enjoy it, you'll really enjoy it. He is fantastic in it. And there's sort of two halves of it. There's one where they're making a show about wrestling, and that's interesting.
Yeah.
And there's one that's almost like a fairly predictable soap opera, where like things happen that have happened in soap operas for decades.
Yeah.
But somehow I care a lot about it and about the characters, and there's things about feminism and about people being who they are and not being comfortable in their own bodies and racism. And there's a lot of different topics in there.
Okay.
Really good, really well framed. I think it uses the idea that there are these lots of different women who come together to wrestle. And, you know, wrestling's got these sort of, especially in the 80s, it was very simple stereotypes and archetypes that they'd use for things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. And that part of it's really interesting is how they use that to make a character much larger than
right.
he or she is, or sometimes isn't even. There's one, I can't remember where she's from, but I think she's specifically not Chinese, and then put her in, like, they make her a very stereotypical Chinese, you know, just because that's going to play well with the audience.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, that sort of thing happens a lot, and it's interesting to see, because of course that sort of we'll just do it because they'll get it was very, I feel like that's a very 80s mentality.
yeah, definitely.
But yeah, really good. Glow is really good. I've also been watching Fargo still. I've said before, I think on this podcast, that I don't think this series of Fargo is as strong. But having said that, every week it keeps me coming back. So it can't be that bad. It can't be bad.
Very true. I've watched the first episode of it, and that's another one I've got to go back to. So yeah. It's one that I will be catching up on at some point.
I'm still not sure who I want to win Fargo. Because every season, you're like, you remember the first season, there was that the pregnant cop, and sort of like, you're pregnant, so you should probably win, because that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then in the second season, you kind of wanted Kirsten Dunst's husband to win.
Right, I forget his name.
Just because he was a little bit downtrodden, and you kind of want him to win. And then in this season, I don't know who I want. But in many ways, that makes it even better. Like in Game of Thrones, I don't want any of those people to win at all, because they're all terrible. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where that goes. I've also been playing Crash Bandicoot. My fiance and I bought Crash Bandicoot on the PlayStation.
Ah, yes, that seems to have done really well. I know Matt's very into that. So yes.
It is excellent. My fiance played it when she was a kid. I haven't played it at all ever. I never played a Crash Bandicoot game. So it's really interesting that she's really good at it and I'm really bad at it. But we're both still really bad at it. Crash 1 is a hard game.
Yeah.
I'm told that the second one gets a bit lighter and a bit easier. But the first, I mean, it's pull your hair out stuff.
Yeah,
definitely would recommend it. It's only about 30 quid as well.
Yeah, the last time I played Crash Bandicoot was when they snuck a bit of Crash Bandicoot into what's the game called?
Is it Uncharted?
Uncharted, yes. Yeah, they snuck it into Uncharted, and that was the last time that I think I probably played it. So
yeah, it's a I would say anyone with a PlayStation, this might be a must buy because it's really good. I guess if you don't like platformers, it's not really going to be much for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is excellent. The last thing, Dave, I've made a little podcast.
Oh, yes. I saw you tweeting about this. This is
a little podcast.
this is your wedding podcast.
Sure. So for a while now, I've been listening to Startup, and Startup's really great. For those who don't know, it's a podcast about a guy starting a podcast network. And I started listening to one called Just Make the Thing, which is about an Australian girl who made a similar podcasting network in Australia.
Yeah.
And it's more about when people have these creative things that they want to do and they don't end up doing them. But the format of that sort of talking you through the steps that you're taking are really interesting. And I thought we could do that with the wedding, and that would be really good to just document what's happening and you know, what's happened to us. And, you know, someone might find it useful.
Yeah.
It's called Civil Partners. It's on the iTunes, those iTunes that they have now. I don't know when they'll be coming out. We haven't got a schedule at all because most of it's retrospective, because we've already done a lot of it.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're coming out. But yeah, subscribe would be good. But check it out. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Really interesting. That's a great idea, I think. Really interesting idea.
There's not that many wedding-y podcasts around either.
No, I'm sure they're not. Interesting you should mention Startup, because Startup is going to be turned into a TV show, that podcast.
Do you know, Dave, this is my most anticipated TV show right now. I couldn't care less about Game of Thrones for this TV show. Starring Zach Braff,
it's Zach Braff, and it's sort of loosely based on the Startup podcast. I think he's been involved with the writing and the development of it, along with Zach Braff as well. So
Alex Bloomberg is the guy, I believe.
Yes, that's the guy.
Do you know off the top of your head, while we're on the subject, if there is a UK release for that?
At the moment, no, but it's still a bit early because it's not due out until fall season, as Americans call it. I suspect, it being Zach Braff, it will come over here. I'm sure it'll be something E4 will look at, I would have thought. Right up their street. So, but we'll see how it goes down in the ratings, you know, in America, and you know what the buyers thought of it. But yeah, I suspect we'll see that somewhere over here at some point. It looks good. So
great. Well, yeah, that's all my stuff there.
Well, I mean, for me, as I say, I've been mainly kind of catching up on things. I finished The Crown finally.
How's that?
Which is brilliant. Absolutely superb. That that series. I'm really looking forward to the next one. Very kind of interesting the way that they portray some of the characters. Claire Foy is amazing as Queen Elizabeth. It's a brilliant take on her. And Matt Smith as well, he's great as Philip. the funny thing was, there was a little story that Matt Smith told about that meeting, I think it was Prince William, and somebody had obviously mentioned to him that he's portraying his grandfather. So, yeah. And he goes up, says, I hear you're portraying my grandfather in this TV show. And he's like, yes, yes, I am. He's like, legend. So, amazing. It's like, no pressure. he's really good. And you don't know how truthful these things are, but it's a really great take on it. I really like his writing. He's done, obviously, this is completely the guy's wheelhouse because it's he's done various movies and political stuff and this sort of about the royals and the British political system, and this kind of mashes everything together. So I'm very interested to see where it goes moving forward, because we've only got one more series with these two as the leads, and then they're going to recast everybody. So as they get older, they will recast people rather than age them, which I think is quite an interesting idea.
Definitely.
So that's going to be cool. I caught up with Colony as well, which has just come back for its second season. I got about half a season left. It's only 10 episodes. So I got half a season left of the first season. So I binge watched my way through that and the first episode of the second season. That's a great sci-fi show. Really good. Second season, the basis of Colony. It's set in Los Angeles, and the place has been invaded by aliens, which up until quite late on in the first season, you don't have any clue who or what they are, what they look like.
Sure.
And they've basically dropped giant walls down to segment certain areas. And this is all based in Los Angeles, so it's segmenting sections of Los Angeles off from each other. And the two leads are a family who, one is working for what they call the transitional government, which is the people, the human side of the people that are in charge and trying to maintain order for the alien invaders. And he's working for them because he believes that's a way that he can get his son back, who was trapped on the other side of one of the walls.
Oh, sure.
And then the wife, who is basically working for the insurgents. So you've got the pair of them kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum. So it's really interesting. Very well put together. The first episode of the new season, you actually see how the walls came down, and they actually kind of do it as a way of kind of introducing some new characters.
Sure.
So you see some of the new characters and how the place was all segmented up. But yeah, I'm really enjoying that series, so I'm really happy that's back. New shows this week. Who Do You Think You Are came back.
Yeah.
Which is a great series. Charles Dance was the first one that they did. I mean, if you're into genealogy anyway, and I have an interest in that. So the Charles Dance one is fascinating, though. Sort of discovers relatives that he didn't realize he had and that sort of
because,
thing.
Because last year's big one was Danny Dyer, wasn't he? He was a descendant from royalty.
Although I have to say that's slightly spurious, because you go back far enough, pretty much everybody's descended from somebody royal. So.
Of course.
But the Charles Dance one was really fascinating because he didn't really know much about his parents. So there's a lot of things that kind of go on there. But yeah, really interesting to see that sort of history. And Zoo, the wonderful, ridiculous Zoo, came back for his third season as well, which has kind of moved everything forward 10 years, as we saw at the end of the last season. So they've managed to cure the normal animals, but you now got mutant animals invading the mainland.
Right, yeah.
And they're trying to get back to one of the team members that they thought had died in the last season and apparently hasn't. And his now fully grown daughter has sort of come back, and he's trying to get back to him. So
that's good. Interesting when things get moved forward like that. Like with Fargo, where the first two are sort of set further back in the past, and now the new ones, like this nairish, and it, you know, it's interesting how it jumps, and they link it like that.
Yeah, no, it's good. Then episodes got a new trailer this week as well. Which have you watched any of episodes?
Yes, a few. I haven't caught this trailer though. I shall have to do that.
Yeah, just hilarious. One of the best US comedies in recent years.
Yeah,
really funny. Matt LeBlanc playing a very twisted version of himself. just wonderful skewering of the US studios, and just hilarious. So the new trailer is brilliant. It comes back in the US in August over there, and then it should be a few months after that over here. That's usually how it runs. So we'll see that. That's the final season of that as well. Looking forward to that. And Fallout 4 has been my main gaming obsession. I've started.
I saw this on the list and I thought, Fallout 4, wasn't that 2 years ago now?
Yeah, well, the thing is, we talked quite a lot with Mike about it last week. And having got talking about it and done quite a lot of the main quest stuff in Skyrim, which is what I've been playing up until now. I hadn't played through any of the DLC for Fallout 4. So I decided to go back to that. And starting playing through some of the DLC. I've just started touching on it right now. So I'm...
How are you finding it?
It's great. I mean, again, the thing I love about the Bethesda games is you can mod them to a ridiculous extent. So there's a fantastic mod that somebody's made called Sim Settlements, which is kind of taking the Sim City idea of zoning the, you can build up
a residential zone and then a commercial zone.
Yeah. But you can build up the areas in Fallout, which you could, you could always do, but you had to kind of manually build all the houses and stuff. And now what you can do is you can basically zone areas and the settlers will sort of build everything themselves.
Oh, that's good.
And set up shops and stuff. So,
that is good.
So you can sort of set it all up and then it gives you a reason to go back and visit them because they create...
To see what they've done.
Yeah, see what they've done and created taxes and all that sort of stuff. So you get money back from the businesses and stuff that they set up. But yeah, it's really, really, really nicely put together. So it's worth checking out if you want to go back to Fallout 4. That's a great mod to go and look for. It's called Sim Settlements. But yeah, it's thoroughly enjoying it. I want to get into a bit more of the DLC because I'm not very far into that.
I played through Far Harbor. It was pretty good, actually. I think I enjoyed that more than the main story, possibly.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. And I didn't play the other one, Nuka World.
Yeah. So I've got that to do. I've got
Those
Far
are the
Harbor
two
to do.
Proper big story ones, aren't they?
Yeah. And then there's one that adds loads of robot stuff in.
Yes.
And automation and things. So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing through all that. That should be good. And the other bit of little bit of news that arrived this week, sadly, Nelson Ellis, who was Lafayette on True Blood and played Shimwell on the recent series of Elementary, passed away at age 39 this week. And real shame, heart failure, sadly related to drugs and alcohol abuse from something that they've released today. The family released a thing basically saying, ironically, he was trying to get off it. And that seems to be what killed him. He'd been in and out of rehab and he was trying to get himself clean. And, something happened. His kidneys had problems and his heart couldn't cope with it. And sadly, not with us anymore, which is a great shame because he was a fabulous actor. And from what everybody's been saying, really lovely guy. So real tragedy when somebody dies at that age. But he was amazing on True Blood. On True Blood, it was a great show as well, and he was a standout character for it. So, but yes, I think that's all the general kind of stuff for this week. Shall we move on to some TV and film news?
Shall we?
TV and film news this week. Start off, as we do always, with our air date updates. Few new and returning shows. We've got Anna Friel is coming back as Marcella in a second series of that ITV crime noir drama. I actually missed this. I don't know whether you caught any of it. I'm told it's very good.
No, Marcella. Is it Marcella or Marcella?
Marcella.
Okay.
I think. I could be Marcella. It could be Marcella. I'm not sure, but it's spelled Marcella, so...
Sure.
But yes, that's whatever it's called. It's back for a second season. A kind of interesting idea. Basically, it's a Scandinavian drama set in London. It's one of those kind of Scandinavian crime noir dramas, but set in London, which is, I think, is a really interesting idea. So I'm going to have to go and see if I can find the first season of that somewhere, because that sounds quite interesting. Channel 4 renewed No Offence for a third season, which is a brilliant, brilliant show, if you've not seen that. Reads like it could be a police procedural, but is way, way more than that. It's hilariously funny, but incredibly dark as well. So well worth going to watch. And Jamestown renewed for a second season on Sky One. This was really good. I still got a few episodes. It's another one that I've got to go and catch up on, but it's done phenomenally well. It got something like 1.3 million average for the channel. Was beating BBC Two and Channel 5 in the time slot as well, because it
this
went
is
out
the,
on Friday
the period drama, yeah?
Yeah, it's a period drama about Jamestown in the colonies and the arrival of the first women to the town, basically. Mm. But it's done brilliantly well for them, so I'm glad that that's coming back for another season. I did really enjoy the episodes that I saw, so looks really good. And Marty Noxon, one of the writers from Buffy and Angel, has got a new movie out on Netflix coming on the 14th of July called To the Bone, which is about... It sounds quite serious because it's about eating disorders and that sort of thing. Stars Lily Collins. But it's written by Marty Noxon, who, if you know any of her writing from sort of Buffy, Angel, Grimm, I think she was involved with as well, she has a very dark sense of humour. So it's actually a lot funnier than it sounds. stars Lily Collins and Keanu Reeves as the two main leads, as sort of she ends up going to this rehab center for people with eating disorders, and Keanu Reeves is the rather unconventional doctor that runs the place.
That seems like in a sort of addressing mental health issues, like in a 13 Reasons Why sort of put a lot of light on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And started a conversation about that. I think that's good in programming.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that sort of thing.
Sure.
We have spoken to a few people. If you want to go back a few podcast episodes, we spoke to Shir Kammer, who's the line producer on it, and our friend Phil Eisler, who's the composer for it. So yeah, we've had some experience and some coverage of this already, but I just wanted to flag up for people that it's coming to Netflix on the 14th of July if you want to go and watch that. Moving on to some news this week. It's been a bit of a slow news week, I think partly because of the fact that it was... Traitor's Day, sorry, July 4th.
Excellent.
In America.
Good bit of casual racism there.
It was July 4th in America. So
actually, Dave, it was July 4th everywhere.
but you know what I mean. It was Independence Day for them. So it was that out there. And that's kind of slowed things down on the news front in the US. And we've got Comic-Con coming up at the end of the month. So a lot of people are holding stuff back for Comic-Con when that arrives.
Hopefully there'll be some good news after that then.
Yes, I expect a lot of good news for the end of the week. Ironically, I'm in America at the time when Comic-Con is on, but I'm not at Comic-Con.
Of course.
I'm in LA, not San Diego. So,
It'll be quiet.
Yes, we do. Probably will be. We'll be covering stuff from Comic-Con as it comes out. But news we do have this week. Once upon a time, the Disney TV show that sort of apes pretty much every Disney property they can get their hands on. I'm expecting Star Wars to show up at some point. But Once Upon a Time is got a seventh season. And for many people, as probably know, this is quite a big reboot this season because they basically fired all but three of the cast members.
Wow.
So you've got the main lead has gone. The only people that are left behind are the Evil Queen, Rumpelstiltskin, and the guy that plays Hook, and Andrew J. West, who was introduced in the finale as Henry, or an older version of Henry. Those are the only characters that stay behind. They've just announced announced a whole bunch of new people that are coming onto the show. Danielle Ramirez, who was in Sopranos, and she was in the reboot of Heroes, and she was in Devious Maids. So she's coming on. Gabrielle Anwar, who's in Burn Notice and The Tudors, she's joining. They're the two new series regulars. Then as recurring characters, you've got Mika Cox, who was in Undercovers and Lost and Chicago Med, joining. Adele Kane, she's from Rain and Teen Wolf. And also Rose Reynolds, who was in Wasted, the E4, brilliant E4 series.
I was going to say, you quite liked that, didn't you, Dave?
Yeah, it was amazing, that show. And we've got some news on Wasted as well, unfortunately. And she was in Poldark as well. But yeah, Rose is lovely. I've actually met Rose. She's really, really nice. So they're joining as recurring characters. We don't know what those characters are yet.
But just that they'll recur.
Just that they are you know, the new characters coming. All women as well. They've not announced any male casting.
Yes.
So it's an all-female announcement, that one. We know the first episode of the new series is called Hyperion Heights. There's been some speculation about exactly what that will mean, but we do know that the new show, this sort of reboot version of the show, is abandoning Storybrooke, which is where the previous six seasons have been set, and they were moving to a new city and having a new curse. So
potentially a good jumping on point for people. Yes,
possibly Hyperion Heights is going to be the name of the new place, maybe. So
sure.
We don't know, but so that's going to be quite interesting. So when I found out that Rose was joining this, I did message her and going, okay, so you're joining this, what's happened to Wasted? And then, unfortunately, at the moment, they're not getting a second series. She has said never say never, but basically what they couldn't get the funding, apparently, for a second series, so it's not happening anytime soon, which is absolutely tragic, because it was brilliant, that show, and by far one of the funniest UK comedies last year. I'm quite gutted about that, but what can you do, you know?
What can you do? We'll fund it ourselves, Dave.
Yeah, maybe.
A whip round.
Yes, we could have a whip round for it. Once Upon a Time returns on Netflix for season 7. It should be back on the 7th of October, which is the day after it airs in the US. But we'll see. They haven't officially announced that yet, but I expect that when it'll land. Next up, we have Selma Blair joining the Heathers reboot. Now, do you know the movie Heathers?
No, I don't.
Cult classic 80s film, which was set in a high school where starred Winona Ryder in the original, and she was playing sort of one of the popular girls in high school, but there was a clique of mean, bitchy girls called the Heathers, because all three of the girls were named Heather, and one of them embarrasses her at a party, and the new kind of loner guy called DJ, who was played by Christian Slater in the film, starts to bump off the Heathers one by one in various inventive ways.
Yes. Do you know why I know that film?
Why?
It's not The Simpsons. American Dad did that. American Dad did that in a TV, in a show.
There you go, you see. You get all your references from cartoons. So the new version that they're making stars Grace Victoria Cox from Under the Dome, who's playing the Veronica Sawyer part, who's the main lead. It's described as a pitch black anthology series, and she's going to be dealing with a very different but equally vicious group of Heathers. So it sounds like I don't know whether that's going to move out of the school setting possibly, and they're just going to have a different group of Heathers each time. And I mean, they're saying it's an anthology series, so it could quite possibly be the same kind of plot, just repeated in different situations, maybe. Mm. I'm not sure how they're going to deal with it. But they said, our take on Heathers is cinematic, surprising and twisted comedy that gives a wonderful nod to the film and also creating something entirely on its own, is what they're saying. So We'll see. James Scully, who is a relative newcomer, is taking on the role of JD. Somebody called Melanie Fields is playing one of the Heathers. They've also said Shannon Doherty, who is one of the Heathers, I think, in the original, is going to be joining in a small but pivotal role, as yet unnamed role. But, you know, it's good that they're bringing in some of the original original cast as well.
Yeah.
Selma Blair's character, she's going to be playing Jade, who's the stepmother of Heather Duke, one of the Heathers. She's described as a menthol smoking stripper who is rough around the edges, but with a bit of glamour to her. She's biding her time until her 82-year-old husband kicks the bucket.
Wow. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yes. So yeah, that's a sort of gold diggery kind of character she's landed. I don't know. It doesn't arrive in the US until next year. So it's airing on the Paramount Network over there. No UK air date right now. I don't know. It could be an interesting one to see that. I mean, they are kind of mining pretty much every film property they can lay their hands on at the moment to try and make TV shows. So we'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah, it seems so.
Yeah. So, I mean, because you've had Fargo, you've had this, you've had, I'm trying to think what else they've done, but yeah, there are quite a few of them. Taken was done recently.
Yeah.
SWAT. So all sorts of things. But yeah, we'll see where that what happens with that. And lastly, we've got Supergirl. We've got a bit of casting news for that. Supergirl will have a new mum when it comes back, and it's played by Lois Lane, or Erica Durance, as she's known in real life. Played Lois Lane in Smallville.
Ah, and there you go.
So you know how
I was going to say, don't they try to keep those actors in? Didn't we talk about that before?
Yeah, I mean, they've done a really good job of taking kind of characters from older DC shows and then folding them back in again. We've had a couple of Smallville people show up, but she's, you know, was quite a major part of Smallville, you know, that series. So because she was playing Lois Lane, Lois wasn't a character right at the beginning. She was sort of introduced later on. So she's going to be joining. Interestingly, though, she's actually taking over the part, because Allura, who is Supergirl's mum, has been in it before. That character's been in it, played by Laura Benanti, was originally playing the character. Unfortunately, she's got work commitments in New York, and she's just had a new baby, so she's obviously not wanting to kind of, you know, go and spend months away filming, you know, in Vancouver, which is where they shoot. She wants to stay close to home, and she's got work commitments there anyway, so she couldn't come back, and they decided Erica Durance was a good fit for the role. So that's the first time recently they've recast like a major part in one of those shows, as far as I can remember. So yeah, I think that's kind of interesting, but should be quite good. They've got a habit of doing this with the Berlantiverse shows. You've got John Wesley Shipp, who played Flash in the 90s, who plays Barry's dad and Jay Garrick on The Flash. Brandon Routh, who of course played Superman, turned up as Ray Palmer in Arrow and then Legends of Tomorrow. Mark Hamill, who obviously famously... that guy, somebody waves a light stick around. That guy obviously voiced the Joker in the animated series and also played Trickster in the 90s version of The Flash, then reprised the role of Trickster in the new version of The Flash, which I thought was a really nifty little idea. So and you've also got people like Dean Cain, who also played Superman. He plays Kara's father. Helen Slater, who played Supergirl, she plays Kara's mother. Laura Vandervoort popped up as Indigo, and she played Supergirl on Smallville. So, you know, they like to keep it in the family on that show. So
they barely have to cast anyone, I suppose. They've just got a list of people who used to be in Smallville.
Well, and I think it's like every actor that's working in Canada will pop up on that show at some point. Speaking of which, I mean, Erica Durance, of course, the other show that she's been working on up until quite recently, because they just had their final season, was Saving Hope, and her co-star in that was Michael Shanks, who also appeared in Smallville. So famously was in Stargate, but played Hawkman / Carter Hall in Smallville as well. So yeah, I think at some point every person will end up on a superhero show.
Tell you what, Dave, it's a Smallville world.
Very good. You get a round of applause for that one. That's very good. So Supergirl, of course, will be back in the autumn. We don't have an exact date for it yet, but it's usually... they tend to run a few weeks behind the US, either a week or a few weeks behind the US, just because they need to take a few breaks out, because they break for things like Thanksgiving and that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have the interview.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So this week's interview is with the composer Bryce Jacobs. Bryce is an Australian-born composer, and it's fair to say he's fairly eclectic in the things that he's worked on, because he's worked across TV, film, comedy, documentary, and in gaming. He writes songs, he's written scores, he's done orchestration, he's worked as a session and touring musician for Australian artists such as Josh Pike and Genevieve Maillard. He's also worked with people like Sophie B. Hawkins on an international level. But it was really film and TV composing that where he discovered his passion. So he moved to LA and joins Hans Zimmer's legendary remote control production studios, what were referred to as Zimmer Elves, for the fact that there's so many people that go through Hans Zimmer's studio, it's ridiculous. He worked very closely with Ramin Djawali, who is the legend that composes all the music for Game of Thrones and a million other things these days. Contributed to scores such as Clash of the Titans, Pirates of the Caribbean, Being on Stranger Tides, 50 Shades of Grey, Rush, Man of Steel, Prison Break, 12 Monkeys, Medal of Honor, the video game, and Call of Duty as well. So
that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's worked just across the board on loads of different things. His dedication to music led to this interesting development, because the other thing that he's done, he's developed his own guitar. It's entirely of his own design. It's got basically the same range and capabilities as a piano. He's pretty much the only person I think that can play it at the moment. But it's an incredible sounding instrument. So he began kind of writing, and you can hear that in quite a lot of soundtracks, particularly on things like Rush. It got, and I think they used it in 50 Shades of Grey as well, but he got used quite a lot on Rush. So you can hear it in quite a lot of the soundtracks. The recent thing he's been composing for is a new film called Random Tropical Paradise. Here's the interview with Bryce. It's about 20, 25 minutes long. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week. Hi, Bryce.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Thanks for coming on and spending a little bit of time just to talk through some of your work and stuff. Let's start with, how did you get your start in music?
Well, you know, I've had an affinity with music all my life and played piano from 5 and started guitar at 11, but it was the following year that I, for better or worse, you know, till death do us part kind of thought I'm in, when I heard Stairway to Heaven and got obsessed with learning that. But in terms of the professional world, I mean, it was a kind of, I guess through my teens, I just kind of started to do professional gigs by default. You just find yourself playing these kind of adult or semi-adult situations. And I had a great stage band at my high school, Kirui High School, that our music teacher was able to get us a lot of professional gigs back then. So it was a great kind of trial by fire, really.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, I played in bands for years. I studied, you know, did a couple of degrees. And then I did a lot of touring as a touring guitarist in my 20s. And then that kind of, I started to morph into the film world at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I can tell you, you know, if you're wondering how I got started in film more specifically, I could give you that story.
But, yeah, go on. How'd you get started in film?
Well, I was playing in a band, and I designed this guitar, and the drummer was, you know, playing it. And I said that I studied, and he said, do you actually orchestrate? And I said, yeah. And he said, how much do you charge? I said, I don't know. I've never charged for it before. And meanwhile, I had an old composition lecturer that had started an orchestration business. And I rang her to work out the rates. And she said to me, actually, if you want to help out, we're getting a bit of Hollywood work. And we've got a movie coming in about a penguin that can dance but can't sing. And that was Happy Feet. So, you know, at the same time, I was working on this Australian film called Gabriel. And I was working as a copyist on Happy Feet. And that started me working as an orchestrator on a few different films, a lot of Australian films. And, you know, a couple of times a year we get the big American ones, usually thanks to John Powell. I guess a couple of years into that, I just, even though I've been to the States a couple of times before, I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for 3 months and try my luck and see what happens. And And at the end of that, I landed a job at remote with Ramin Djawadi as his assistant.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I guess, the start of it all.
I mean, remote is Hans Zimmer's company. We refer to you as a Zimmer elf.
Yeah, right. I haven't heard that one before, but yeah, go.
Because, half the composers in LA seem to go through Hans Zimmer's place at some point in their career.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like a phenomenal learning experience.
It is, yeah.
Particularly working with somebody like Ramin as well.
Yeah, I came in as he was finishing Prison Break and he'd just done Iron Man the year before. I'd interned at remote for a good couple of months, and on the 89th day of a 90-day visa waiver, 5 hours before getting on the plane, he rang me up and said, let's do it. So I wouldn't believe it unless I lived it. So, a couple of months later, I started as his assistant, and I was, you know, he was kind of a one-man team at that point, and I only had an assistant. And since then, he's obviously blossomed and, you know, become the Game of Thrones guy we all know.
Yeah, yeah.
I spent some time assisting and, you know, doing kind of transitioning into, you know, the additional music realm. And then I became his main additional music guy. And then I went independent in the kind of confines of remote and started working with other composers, including Hans. And the funny thing is that the way I got out of the assistant category was via the guitar playing, which I, you know, kind of felt like I'd kind of semi left behind, but it got me a bit of an attraction. So then I could then bridge into the writing side of things.
Yeah.
Because assistant to writer can be quite a distance. So that was a nice kind of sidestep, like a bit of currency to get me into the writer side of things.
Yeah. I mean, you're, we'll come back to the guitar stuff as well because of the guitar you invented. But your bio describes you as a unique and eclectic composer, which I think, having gone through your list of things, I think is probably fair to say, because, I mean, your range of work is like composing songs, scores, orchestration. You've been session and touring musician, as you mentioned. You've done films, TV, documentaries, comedies, dramas, video games. I mean, it's kind of, they're pretty much everything. Yeah. It really is a sort of mix of having tried pretty much everything at this point. The movie you're doing at the moment is called Random Tropical Paradise.
It is.
How did you get involved with that?
My agent brought it to me, and concurrently the music supervisor recommended me to the director, Sanjeev. And so, you know, he heard, I gave him a reel and he came, and we spent a good amount of time just talking about, you know, a whole bunch of things. But the thing we both found a love of was that, I call it that all in genre 80s sensibility, where you get a film and you know, there's the comedy, there's the romance there's some adventure. You don't get a lot of that nowadays, and you don't get a lot of that done well. And when I watched the cut that Sanjeev gave me of the film, I realized that he'd done a well-crafted version of that. And I just fell in love with it. And I pitched it on email to him of what my angle would be. And a couple of days later, he rang me up and said, "Do you want to do my movie?" And I'm like, absolutely. I don't know how it happened.
So where did you start with that? What was your sort of pitch to him, and how did you get into it?
There are a lot of facets to the film. There's the comedy aspect, there's an adventure aspect, there's a romance aspect. But the throughput for the whole thing and the heart of it is this bromance, you know. So it's loosely, it's about a groom that gets jilted on his wedding day, and his best man is like, you know, with all his underlying love and affection for his best friend and trying to navigate him through the worst period of his life, is trying to keep him upbeat with humor, keep him distracted. So this film is really about this friendship that we all understand in different guises. You know, that was the first thing I actually did. I wrote the song for the film before I did anything else. I spent a few days on that. It's called Best Man. And I played it for Sanjeev, and he loved it. I mean, it was good, because I thought, he doesn't like it, I've just wasted a whole bunch of days. But then that became the kind of that bromance theme for the film, that what we do is we juxtapose it. So they might be having, you know, some witty banter on screen, but that more sentimental music plays underneath, and it gives you a sense of history and depth to the characters that goes beyond the scope of the film, you know. And then from that, we had a tropical mafia theme. you know, there was that kind of yacht rock sensibility that I had a lot of fun with. There's obviously a romance theme. There's like a tropical theme. There's like a full-on stoner on the beach forever theme. So, but the bromance thing is the cohesion to it all.
Yeah, one of the interesting things with your stuff, which I think you seem to do a lot more than a lot of other composers, is you add actual songs into the mix as well.
Yeah.
Because as you said, you wrote a song for this. That's quite different to quite a lot of the composers that are out there, because I, you know, quite often they don't do that. Is that sort of because of your background?
Yeah, and I, you know, songwriting is very close to my heart. You know, I think that I did a lot of, you know, wrote a lot of songs in bands and recordings in Australia, etc. But, you know, at the time, I any production chops that I had was just via osmosis watching other people in the studio, but it, you know, it wasn't enough to really be able to pull anything off that I had in my head. So, I mean, that was another great thing about Hans's place, is that it gave me that skill set and filled in the gaps when it came to computer technology and engineering. And all of a sudden, it was this emancipation of, you know, getting these ideas out. So, you know, I went through this intense couple of years of doing soundtrack stuff, and then as I came out on my own, I wanted to see if I could use all these things that mean so much to me, you know, the great breadth and depth of soundtrack music with songwriting. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, Best Man's a bit of an exception, because it's a very honest, I guess, heartfelt song, comes from a professional and personal place. And even the vocal on it's very dry and very honest, you know, you want to kind of be in the same room, kind of intimate feeling with it. And the lyrics I've lived every side of. Usually when I'm doing a song, it's much more epic, you know, take the walls down. Like I just did a reinvention of Jolene for Position Music, and that's a completely different kettle of fish. So,
yeah.
But I do love that you can just dip into anything stylistically that is justified by whatever narrative that you have in front of you, and then your personality is the cohesion between all that.
Yeah, I was going to mention the cover that you did of Jolene, because there's a whole bunch of those songs which were up on your website, and you've done sort of Jolene and Crying by Roy Orbison, Digging in the Dirt by Peter Gabriel, a bunch of others as well. So what were they done for? Were they done for a specific project, or were they done because you fancied like trying it?
Well, you know, they're all kind of passion projects that I've chipped away at in my spare time, just, you know, compelled to do, and then, you know, eventually found a home for them in a lot of respects. But ironically, even though, you know, a composer is largely considered to just deal with instrumental music, with the song side of things, my angle was the lyrics, and that was my kind of, you know, the narrative would start first, the story, you know.
Mm.
And like, for instance, with Jolene, I'd never heard a version. I'd heard, like, obviously there's the brilliant Jolene version by Dolly Parton. The lyrics are brilliant.
Yeah.
But every time you hear a guy's version, like, you know, her version is, you know, Jolene, don't steal my man. The guy's version is like, Jolene, let's just run off together. But there was never this kind of in-between guy version that is begging Jolene not to exercise her siren-like romantic... Yeah. To completely ruin his life because he's just too weak, you know.
Yeah.
So it all kind of came out of there, and it was just a darker, more brooding version. You know, Digging in the Dirt was, you know, another one where, you know, when that song first came out, you know, I was quite young, and I remember, like, man, this, you know, Peter Gabriel, this is like some honest stuff, you know, especially for the time. And more recently, I worked with Juliana Barilaro that I got her in, and I wanted to kind of show the full gamut of every, you know, emotion in that song. Like you're scared by her, you're enticed by her, and then you want to be, you know, on the other side of the planet from her, but then by the end you want to give her a hug and feel sorry for her. So a lot of this stuff just comes like it would from a film. It's the story, it's the narrative, and then the music is a lot easier to work with once you've got that centerpiece, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening through them on the website. I really like those versions. They're great pieces of work. So, encourage people to go on and have a look on your website for those, because they are really good. As we covered before, you've worked, you know, you're songwriting, and you've worked in film and TV or games, and games as well. Do you have any preference for one or the other, or do you like to keep a mix of things?
It is a mix of things. I feel like I get to completely spread my wings in the, I guess, the reinvent, well, not reinvented, like whether it's an original song or a reinvented song, that cinematic song experience. But having said that, sometimes, you know, I just get over it and I want to do a film again. You know? I mean, they're all so different, you know, a film, it's a real journey within a certain amount of time, and a a TV show has a greater arc to it, that you've got many hours to tell that story. And then a video game, especially in recent years, can be a real cinematic experience that you're trying to mess with the player in certain ways or try to fortify their experience. So they are different approaches, but all of them involve a story, you know? So
It's the talking of TV shows, you've taken over on 12 Monkeys as well.
Yeah, I did the first couple of episodes and then moved on to do this a lot of this reinvented stuff.
Right, okay.
Your music. So yeah, just kind of dipped into that for the start of the third season.
Right, okay. Yeah, and that's quite a fun show, and it's just been renewed for a fourth and final season as well. So that's quite good. She said you worked on Prison Break, some of Chicago Fire and Chicago PD. I noticed you popped up on.
Well, worked as an additional guy for a few people. Prison Break, I was more purely assisting because that was just the start of my LA experience. But you know, there's been a whole bunch of things where, especially composers I love and respect, you know, I'm always happy to try and help them out of a scheduling bind.
Film-wise, Man of Steel, you popped up on.
Yeah, that was an interest. That was happening concurrently to Rush. With Man of Steel, it was interesting because Hans got me to do, I guess, a lot of guitar stuff at the outset, and they actually built an instrument out of my guitar playing. Like I sampled, you know, spent a lot of sampling, and you can hear it in aspects of the film, but especially in Hans's sketchbook, that massive half an hour thing on the album. But, you know, it's funny, actually, I was walking in the main kitchen one day and it was really weird because I heard my guitar playing coming down the hall in a series of notes I've never played. Hans doing his thing. And I never realized how much you can identify yourself in playing until that happened. I just walked in and was like, that's me, but I haven't played that before. So that was the most interesting thing about that. But very quickly, as I said, like, because Rush and Man of Steel were going concurrently, I started to go right down the Rush path and, you know, worked extensively on that. So
And I mean, I was listening to some of the tracks also on your website for Rush. And I mean, being a guitar guy and that being a kind of car movie, those two things actually seem to mesh together really quite well. I think it's because I'm so used to Top Gear over here. You know?
I think they played that on Top Gear, actually, which is always fun.
Probably, yeah.
Which my dad loves. But it's funny, you know, like Hans kind of said to me, it's like he put a limitation on me that I wouldn't have thought of since I was 15. And he said, go off and do something, but only with guitars. And I hadn't thought that way since I was a kid, like listening to a lot of Metallica, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd going, oh, imagine this symphony guitars, you know? And so he got me to do that because basically his idea was that it's set in the 70s. You know, we should have, you know, the 70s is very guitar centric. We should dip into that, but give our own modern edge to it with a lot more emotion injected, you know?
Yeah.
So so I went off and laid this 37 guitar thing, pull all nighters and 6-minute piece. And from there, we started to, you know, stratify that into the orchestral elements and the electronica elements. But it was a, you know, really great kind of, I guess, moment for me. And then combining all that with, I mean, there's a lot of me in there. And then there's like, you know, the overarching arc of Hans and his thematic work. And it was just a wonderful experience. Like I you know, working on something that's a true story, you feel like a real responsibility. And especially because Niki Lauda is still alive and he was going to sit there and watch that, you know, the best and worst moments of his life on screen. And I call it a beautiful responsibility, you know, if you get it right. But he was very happy. And it was a wonderful experience working with Hans on that. And I learned a lot from his guidance and got to, you know, find a lot more about my own musicality in the process.
Yeah, you're on Rush, 50 Shades of Grey as well you worked on.
That was for Danny Elfman. I played guitars on that. And the thing I laugh about is I haven't even seen it. Like I would get these weird briefs, like, you know, at bar 40, you know, he throws her on the bed and spanks her or something like that. I'm like, well, what's that going to sound like on a guitar? So I was like, the guitar performance kind of hurts a bit, but you don't mind it, you know. but I'm actually, it's on the soundtrack too. There's two Danny Elfman tracks, and I'm on those too. But that was fun, and also working with Danny, because I'm, you know, it's like Hans. You've got these people who are huge idols, and all of a sudden you're speaking to them about, you know, what their projects. So, you know, it is wonderful.
Yeah, so it's great you're getting to work with those sort of people. We should come on to the guitar as well. Yeah. So you created a 7-octave guitar. Yep. So what exactly is it and why would be the two questions, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still working it out now. I guess in my first year of university, I remember just being so taken with all this orchestral music and Debussy and Wagner in particular, and then just realizing that, because, you know, I initially did a classical guitar degree, you know, I studied jazz and rock and all. And so I just realized that the repertoire for guitar and orchestral music and most other instruments was just, you know, the parallel and never shall the twain meet unless there's a concerto or whatever. So I started to wonder what you would have to do to a guitar to bring it more into that world. So when I went back for my master's degree, which was in composition, it became a focal point and I was determined to get the thing made. And so I started, I thought, well, if I take the piano as a guide in both range and capabilities, then, you know, I'll take Moonlight Sonata and see how many strings I'd need and what tuning I would need to make that happen. And that wasn't too hard because obviously the harmony is, you know, it's not as intense as Debussy, which I moved on to next with Clair de Lune. And then we started going through a lot of tunings. and then once I kind of knocked it into shape, like I worked with an Australian guitar luthier, Gerard Gillet, and he was great because at first I turned up and he said, this isn't going to fly. And then I started talking about different things. And then he started to get excited and he was like, okay, well, if you're thinking about doing it that way. And then he became like a mentor because I would go up to him in my novice and would say, can we do this? And he'd be like, no. Oh, yep. No, that's in path forward, you know? And he said to me at the start, like when I was about to pay him for the first installment of putting this thing together, he said, I just want you to know if this doesn't fly, it's not my fault. But it ended up all coming together and him and I were quite, you know, surprised. You know, this prototype is the one that I still use on everything, and you can hear it on Rush. And wow. Actually, on to the end, that guitar piece plays, and it's the first time I heard it through 11.2 or whatever.
Yeah,
and the thing just takes over the cinema in the low end. It's amazing to hear it like that, you know. And I do. It's a great textural tool for everything I do.
So is there only one of those in existence in the world then at the moment?
There is, and I'm the best and worst player in it.
I was going to say, is it that much harder to learn how to play a sort of 7-octave guitar over a normal guitar?
Well, it is. I mean, you know, there's 12 individual strings, and there's a lot of multi-stringed instruments out of there, like the Chapman stick, et cetera, and the war guitar, but this was different. I didn't want it to be so tapping-centric. I wanted it to be more... you know, I guess typical guitar stuff. And, but the thing is, like, if you wrap your hands around a guitar neck, you've actually got a lot more, you give a lot more to more strings, you know?
Yeah.
So even though this is excessive, you can get your hands around it reasonably, you know, without too much damage. And the thing is too, it kind of follows the overtone series, like with the octaves and fifths, et cetera, in the lower strings, and then the harmony gets closer up the top. So you can bar the lower strings while your other fingers are doing, you know, working on the higher strings. So it does create a natural kind of ergonomic landscape. You know, it's something that has taught me many things as well. I mean, any instrument you put in your hand, it'll take you on a journey, especially before you have any muscle memory on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a fascinating thing to come up with. I've spoken to people before who have made like their own instruments. We've spoken to a guy who sort of made them out of like, you know, boxes and made basses and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those sort of guys. But yes, I thought this one was particularly unique, which, you know, which is very cool. So a couple of last questions. Firstly, what are you on next? Is there anything you could tell me about your next projects?
I have an animation coming in, which I can't talk about. So that's that.
Yeah.
But I'm also, I'm working with a couple of artists and kind of working on a couple of albums that's centered around this, this cinematic approach to songs. But not that just, I mean, a few years ago, and still to a certain extent, there was the bombastic kind of trailer approach, which is great and cool. But I want this to be something that, you know, if you hear that at an album length, it's pretty standoffish.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to have an album feel with these couple of artists I'm working with. How long it takes us, I have no idea because it is, you know, it's balanced with other work. But that's the stuff I'm chipping away at. on this, which I really have, as I said, great passion for.
Cool. And the last two questions, which we ask everybody, because we cover a lot of TV shows on the website, always ask, what TV shows are you watching at the moment? It's the first question.
Better Call Saul. Yeah. It's, you know, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. I mean, it's, they're brilliant. So we've gone through all Breaking Bad, so now we're on Better Call Saul. My favorite TV show of all time is Six Feet Under, hands down. So
yes.
And then the American Beauty guys kind of went on to do that. And then they went on to do True Blood. But Six Feet Under is just unique, quirky, left of center, heartfelt, and incredibly well crafted. So
So this may be covered by my last question, but if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Well, I think it would be. It's hard because you're already aware of the music there and the theme music. But let's just say a TV show came in the same vein as Six Feet Under, I'd be well in my happy place.
Awesome.
It's hard because I think of Thomas Newman and the fantastic job he did on that main theme, and then Richard Marvin with the actual episode. So, you know, so I have to think about the future incantation of that.
It was a brilliant, brilliant show. Something like that again would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right. I shall let you get back to your day. Thank you for spending a bit of time just chatting through your stuff.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. So yes, have a good day.
All right. You too. Thanks so much, Dave.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Bryce. Hope you really enjoyed that. If you want to know more about the 7-octave guitar and listen to some of those covers that we were talking about in the interview, because they're amazing, the covers that he's done, you can find them up on his website, which is brycejacobs.com. Bryce is B-R-Y-C-E jacobs.com. so go and have a look at that. Just some great work up on there. Now on to some highlights for next week. Highlights for next week on TV. As we're kind of in the middle of summer, there isn't a whole lot coming back, but there are some quite big shows. Chicago Fire, which people have been waiting for forever, that is finally returning to Sky Living on the 11th of July at 9 p.m. for its fifth season. It's not a show I watch, but I know we've had messages constantly ever since it started airing in the US of like, when's this coming back? When's this coming back? The other thing that Sky Living thankfully finally rescued, because this was a show I watched, was How to Get Away with Murder, which is back for its third season. I'm hoping they will run straight into the fourth as well after this, which is why they're putting it on in July. I'm hoping that this will run through and then they'll start running the fourth season as it goes out from the US. So that's a brilliant show if you've not seen it. It's wonderful, kind of twisty Shondaland stuff, as they always are with Shondaland TV series, but it's great. It's really good. That there's a new series coming to Netflix called Friends from College, which looks quite interesting. It's about a group of friends from Harvard. Stars Colby Smulders, Kevin Michael Key from Key and Peele, Fred Savage from The Wonder Years, Anne Passery, Nate Faxon, Jae-suk Park. And they're basically playing a bunch of ex-Harvard college buddies who meet up again in their 40s.
Worth a go, isn't it?
Could be anything with Colby Smulders in is worth a go, as far as I'm concerned.
It's a Netflix one.
That's a Netflix show. Starts on the 14th of July, that one.
Straight to the bottom of your list, won't it, Dave?
Yeah, well, that's always the problem with Netflix shows, because you know they're going to be there for a while.
Sure.
You don't immediately
they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Although there isn't a huge amount to watch around at the moment, so I may go and pick that up. And then finally we have minor little show called Game of Thrones, which returns for its epic seventh season. I can say epic because it will be epic. You know it's going to be epic. The last sort of ended with a bunch of people on boats heading towards King's Landing, if I seem to remember, with various dragons in tow and King of the North. And yes, it looks fantastic. I'm sure it'll be brilliant. Obviously, we don't know any more about it than that. But returns on the 17th of July at 2 a.m. So it's simulcasting as usual with the US. It will then go out at, like, I think it's 9 or 10 p.m. on the same evening as well. So looking forward to that. Should also mention, I'm doing a podcast with Matt as a sort of preview thing coming up. That'll be on Entertainment Talk later on in the week. So keep an eye out for that We're recording that on Wednesday, I think. So keep an eye out for that. It'll be over on entertainmenttalk.org. So unless you've got anything else you'd like to add, I think that's everything for this week.
No, that's it. Watch Game of Thrones and listen to our podcast, Civil Partners, on iTunes and wherever you get podcasts.
Yes, Civil Partners. So if you want to find the latest air dates and TV information and all that good stuff, you can find us at geektown.co.uk. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.